Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Entercom Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between, let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Skipper Bud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Well, thanks for sticking with us, folks. We're heading into the second hour. He's Dan Bush. I'm Tom Neubauer. Mitch is on the boards. We come to you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. We are live. We are unrehearsed. And, you know, we take phone calls from people. So if you want to, get you know, tell us about something, brag a little bit, or just... you know, tell us about a big fish you caught or whatever. 799-1250. That's 414-799-1250. Questions or comments? Anyway, Danny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Also, I just want to mention that our Hornswoggle contestant, Roger, needs call back and give Mitch your last name because Mitch forgot to write it down.
Yep, sorry about that.
Hey, Mitch, you're following in Sam's footsteps.
You got to do what you got to do, right? I mean, and I'm trying to fill in as trying to keep things as normal as possible for you guys.
There you go. Well, Danny, biggest coho on Lake Michigan, a Wisconsin record, back in 1999 was 26 pounds and a few ounces. Just imagine that, Danny, a 26-pound coho. And back in...
Now, that's...
What?
That's so big that if I caught it, I'd probably screw up and think I'd caught a king or something.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's huge. My goodness. I wonder if they taste as good as a 3-pound coho.
I don't know. What's the world record coho?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to look that up. But in Chinook salmon, that was caught in
44 pounds.
Yes, right. 44 pounds, yep. 15 ounces in 1994. So, yeah.
And the record before that, I believe, for a lot of years was 43 pounds. Because I remember in the 80s when I was fishing, we actually did catch one that was 35 pounds and another one that was about 31 pounds. And that record, you know, was still kind of out there. But then since that, in the 90s, 44 pounds, well, that one, 44 pounds, 15 ounces, you might as well call that one a 45-pounder.
Yeah, exactly. That's close enough, I guess.
That one's held for a long time then.
Well,
and I don't know if that one will ever be broke.
Yeah, you never know. It might not be. Here we go. Atlantic Sea run salmon. Now, that must be the king salmon, I'm guessing. That one was in 1928 in Norway, and that was 79 pounds. I can't imagine a 79-pound salmon.
Well, actually, I think the world record, I thought, was like 95 pounds up in Alaska. I want to say out of some Kenai Peninsula or something like that.
This is supposedly the world record.
What and kind of salmon, though?
It just says salmon Atlantic sea run.
Okay, the Atlantic salmon is a different salmon.
Right. And
Atlantic salmon is not the Chinook or King salmon like we have here, and that's up in Alaska.
Right. And the big fish, the big ones in the world come from, besides in the ocean, but the Nile River. You know what kind of fish, big fish come out of the Nile River? You know. I know you know.
The Nile River, they got those giant, they look like bass, don't they? Some kind of big giant.
Actually, they look like perch. They're called the Nile perch.
Oh, perch. That's what I meant. Yeah.
And they're like their world record is like 180 some pounds, and they really do look like a yellow perch. They that's exactly what they look like. So you can imagine, you know, you catch one of them 10-inch perch here. Now just imagine that perch was 180 pounds. You'd be eating perch for quite a while.
Well, the giant salmon, like I said, I'm sure the record for the king salmon is 95 pounds up in Alaska. And that would have been broke years ago. And that was one of the most unbelievable fish stories. And I maybe talked about it 10 years ago on the show. What happened was there was a guy from Minnesota up fishing with a guide, I believe, on the river up there for salmon. He hooked into a monster king salmon. And guess how long he played it?
Oh, I don't know, 5 hours?
Try more like 24 hours.
Holy
He fought this fish all night long. They had to chase it up and down the river. When the boat they had was nearly out of gas, they had to jump on somebody else's boat. He continued fighting the fish throughout the night. Now, by then, the story is that news outlets, media had heard about it. So all of a sudden, news outlets are showing up there to try and, you know, get a piece of the story. And by the early the next morning, they finally had the fish where they thought it was kind of tired out. The boat was kind of off to the side in kind of an eddy, and the fish was finning down below. And so they finally decided they'd try and net it. And the guide said it would definitely been the new world record, you know, which I'm guessing over 100 pounds anyway. And just when they had the net halfway on the fish, the boat kind of broke loose in the current and spun away, and the fish was half in the net, half, and they lost the fish. It got off.
Oh.
And, yeah, after 24 hours, the guy fought that fish. And, you know, I've fought some big salmon out of, you know, I've caught, you know, I guess 28-pound salmon is the biggest I personally wound in. Those things are just screamers, man. They just, you know, it's like wicked tuna. They hook and just go and make those runs. So can you imagine a 100-plus-pound king making a run? How incredible that would be. I don't even know what kind of net you'd use for something like that.
And you better have a lot of line on that reel.
Yeah, well, that's why they were chasing the doggone thing. So
it's
a true monster, and it's interesting. In fact, I read the story in Outdoor Life, had a magazine issue which talked about strange but true fish tales. And the guy was interviewed afterwards, and he wasn't as bummed out as what you'd think. He just said, I just thank the Lord that I had the opportunity to encounter that fish and have that experience. So, but that's just incredible. I can't even imagine. A 30-pound king looks enormous to me. To imagine one pushing 100 pounds, that's just nuts.
I would have been really upset myself if I missed that fish. Oh, are you kidding? I'd be making up new four-letter words.
Okay, what can take? Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, that reminds me, you know, when you said about fishing overnight, you know, for like 24 hours, there have been some people that, you know, the bluefin tuna get really big. And I forget if they were like 1,000 pounds or something off of Nova Scotia, but they get some monster bluefins, and they'll do that. They'll actually fight them overnight, only to end up losing them sometimes, you know, most of the time. That's just, I can't imagine fighting a fish for 24 hours, how tired, how sore you would be. Because if you want to get a record, you know, nobody else can touch that rod and reel.
Right, right. No, that would be grueling. Hey, I guess we got Troy and Vilas Counties on the line.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Hey, Troy.
Hey, guys. Troy Woodrow here. How you guys doing?
Good. How you doing, Troy?
Good. I just want to talk a little bit about Alaska fishing. So that fish was 97 pounds, 4 ounces. Les Anderson caught it in the Kenai River, which I've done. I've actually fished the Kenai River. Our biggest one we ever got was 2002, 50-pounder, fishing the Kenai River for kings. You drop colored egg sacks down, and you just they kind of call it Chicago because it's so busy with all the boats, you know. There's two runs on the Kenai River. There's one in like the second week of July, and one in like the third week, right around the third week. So, two runs. It's great. It's a great time. You can go out of Cooper's Landing, and you know, do all that kind of stuff. But you're bringing back memories of you know, the big salmon, the big 50 pounders aren't really as much there anymore as they were back in the day, but you know, our biggest one was 50-pounder anyway.
Troy, did you see any grizzly bears while you were fishing that river?
I did not see any grizzlies. I've seen you know, black bear and you know, other, you know, cinnamon bears, stuff like that. I've never seen. Now, a friend of mine, I used to go to Juneau, Alaska, and he was like a Grizzly Adams kind of guy, and he was a bear hunter. He would go down with the raft, and they popped a ginormous grizzly. He had the paw of the thing. It was like three times the size of my hand. And yeah, he was one of those guys that, you know, he's passed away since, but he would tell me that the only thing that he would go to the store for would be like chicken and milk. He was a trapper for king crabs, and he fished he fished halibut and salmon. And then he was a hunter of bear, and it was pretty cool to go hang out with him in Juneau, Alaska. So Alaska's amazing. I've been there like five times. But anyway, you guys were talking about the Kenai River. I'm actually looking to do a trip hopefully in 2021. You kind of have to plan like 6 months ahead. Bushy, maybe we can go. And but it's a great, you know, the salmon, like I said, they don't have the big monsters as they used to have. There's all kinds of kind of controversy between Canada and the U.S. and harvesting salmon and all that kind of stuff. But our biggest one was 2002, you know, 50-pounder. It was awesome.
Was that on a boat with a guide, Troy?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know me. I can't catch a damn fish without a guide. So, you know, like, that's just, yeah, like, it was with a guide. And, you know, you go out and there's an area, they call it Chicago because it's windy and it's really busy. There's all kinds of boats that so what happens is when you hook on, the other boats have to kind of get out of your way, you know, and there's some fights going on, but for the most part, people do it. And when you hook onto one, you know, it's game on. And then the guy, of course, he's got the big mallet. And it was actually my friend's father who's passed away that caught the 50-pounder. We caught 230s, my dad and I. It was a father and son trip. My dad and I caught 230s. My friend's father caught the 50-pounder. My father just sent me a picture of it, which I didn't have for quite some time. And that thing, I'll send it to you, Bushy, that 50-pounder, that thing is crazy how big it is. So anyway, it's big fun up there, the Kenai River. The Kenai River is where you need to go. Cooper's Landing is kind of where everybody kind of stages. And then you hire the guide. They drop the, like I said, it's dyed egg sacks, right? Like dyed egg.
Yep.
And basic, and you know, because as you know, the salmon aren't hungry. They're hitting the egg sacks as a defense mechanism because they're coming in to do their thing. So it's the mouth there. And if anybody wants, you know, it requires a lot of coordination because, you know, in regards to just trying to get everything, a lot of people go up there to do it, but there's two runs. Both of them are in July. I think the second run is where they say the bigger ones come through. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, that's good information. So if somebody wants to experience a trip of a lifetime, sounds like you got to get up there and hire a guide and get out there. You got a chance at a giant salmon.
Yeah. All right, guys. Just want to chime in.
All right, Troy.
As always.
Yeah, thanks, all right, Troy. Good info, buddy. Thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Talk to you later. And with that, we got another break coming up. And then when we come back, I'm going to tell you, you know, Chicago, Danny, has been known as the Windy City. I'm going to tell you really why they're called the Windy City. And it's got nothing to do with wind. So we'll be right back with more of the cutting of the... Oh, boy, I'm telling you, I'm having one...
You're a genius. You're a genius, Tom. You know everything.
Yeah,
Windy
right.
City...
Anyway, yeah, but we'll be right back with the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors, brought to you by Bait Night Fish Attractive.
Welcome back to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. 799-1250 is our phone number if you have a hunting, fishing report, famous Tom Neubauer bridge report, and right now the famous Tom Neubauer is going to tell us, being as he's a genius and everything, he's going to tell us why Chicago is known as the Windy City.
Yeah, Danny, I'll tell you, Chicago for years has been known as the Windy City, but it's got nothing to do with wind. The wind is just as strong in Milwaukee and other cities as it is in Chicago. It's got nothing to do with the wind. Back in the 1890s, when they were trying to figure out where the next World's Fair was going to be, and by the way, and it did end up in Chicago, and they called it the Columbian Expedition, and I don't know why they called it that, but anyways, the World's Fair down there, and they built this city out of wood and painted it all white. They called it the White City. Not all of Chicago, just where the World's Fair was going to be at. Anyway, but when before it was chosen as Chicago to be the place of it, there was a big fight on where it should be. And the people in New York wanted it to be in New York, and the people in Chicago wanted it there. And the politicians were going back and forth. And there were, you know how when they have editorials, they have cartoons, right, and editorials. And the people in New York were calling the politicians in Chicago big windbags. And it was the Windy City because the politicians were big windbags blowing all this stuff, you know, trying to get their city to be, you know, the headquarters for the World's Fair. So with all these windbags, they started calling it the Windy City because of the politicians. So it's got nothing to do with wind. It's got to do with politicians, again, being windbags.
Well, geez, I always thought it was because it was windy because it was by Lake Michigan, and they talk about, what, doesn't Wrigley Field get windy and so forth?
By Lake Michigan, too. It gets just as windy as here. Same thing with Indiana. What's that big town in northern Indiana right on the lake? Boy, I can't think of it.
South Bend.
Who?
South Bend.
No, that's
the only city I know in Indiana.
There's a whole bunch of them, but anyway, doesn't matter. But no, it doesn't have anything to do with the wind. It's talking about politicians being a bunch of windbags. So they
gotcha.
Call it Windy City. Yep.
So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the musky trolling on Pewaukee here. As I mentioned, the water temps are back down, and we talked about making sure you do a good release. And if possible, if you've caught enough muskies, you don't need a picture of everyone. Even just doing a water release is a good idea. I've been doing that quite a bit. But as far as the muskies, pretty much it's been fairly consistent out here. I've been seeing boats catching some fish. Most people are trolling now. Interesting thing, I don't see a lot of guys out there, Tom, jigging the Bondi baits. I will put a plug in for our friend Bill Schwartz's Slammer crankbaits. Now, a lot of guys... Out years ago, we used to use the Bagleys out here on the lake. And those were pretty much a mainstay for many years. Then you couldn't get buy a new Bagley that would run straight anymore. So Bill came out with his 4-inch deep shad, which you can pick up at Smokey's Muskie Shop. And those work good. Other guys like to use the DT-16s, the Rapalas. And, you know, there's other the Diesel. That was another one that some people would have success with. So every guide out there has his pet baits. Now, Tom, years ago when Bill Schwartz was in our studio, he had some slammers sitting on the desk in front of us. And he was going to give them away to callers. And he pointed at the black one and he said to me, "This has been the hot one." Well, I said, "Well, Bill, I'm the first caller. I'm going to take that one." And I used that black one, and I caught, you know, like 2-3 fish right off the bat using it, like the first day or two. So black became a mainstay for me for many years. It got to the point where I was just running all black. I figured, well, if that's the color they like, why mix it up? So I'd run that on multiple lines. Same years ago with the Bagleys, when they came out with the bright orangish red one. That was the one that I codenamed the Cherry Bon Bon.
Right.
And nobody was using the Cherry Bon Bon, but I was nailing fish on that. Then the kids at the Muskie Shop let it get out, and everybody was using them. But that kind of went cold on me. And the black slammers went cold on me about a year ago. All of a sudden, they just weren't working like they were before. I did bump into Bill Schwartz one time on the lake, and he had told me that the walleye pattern was working good for him. I've never really done super good on that, but then last year, the blue pattern, all of a sudden started to be the one that that was working. So you got to keep, you know, what you do one year, what works one year, Tom, and I'm sure you've seen this with bass fishing or whatever, what works one year may not necessarily work the next time. You might go back to a spot where you did something and you slammed a bunch of whatever the fish might be, and you think, well, I'm going to do the same exact thing and it'll always work. But it's weird, things change.
Well, you're right in that respect. One year I started throwing a Chompers salty sinker, you know, the wacky worm style, and I threw it and it was salt and pepper. It was kind of white with black spots. And that was really good one year. And then the following year, yeah, not so good. And then one year I was using what was called red bug. It was kind of a reddish one with some blue specks in it. Oh, that was good one year too. But then after that, no, not so good. But I'll tell you what, every year, in and out, doesn't matter. The watermelon with red flake, another one is pumpkin. Those watermelon and pumpkin are going to be two standard colors that will always, always work. I believe in those 100%. So that's all there are on those.
So I got another story to tell you here. 2 weeks ago, my brother Tim came down from Oshkosh, and he wanted to go trolling for muskies. And the water temp had cooled down enough, because previously I had told him, don't come down, I'm not fishing. And I normally don't like to go out and fish evenings because it's just so much boat traffic and so forth. But anyway, we went out there, and he's always, you know, tinkering and buying new baits and so forth. But he brought down a custom color slammer. And I don't even know what the name, or if there is a name on the package of this custom color slammer. Well, we put it out. And we caught two fish on that. We were just running like four lines, but we caught two fish on it. So he leaves it with me. The next day, I go out, catch more fish on it. Bottom line is, I had four baits out, and one rod with one bait got like six hits in a row with four fish landed. So to me, that's no accident. When you got four lines out of the same exact bait, the only difference is color, and one particular bait running the same depth gets all the hits. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody what that color is, because that's double secret top probation info now. But
oh, yeah. Complain about me not saying what lake I'm at.
I'm telling you, man. It's So then I called my brother Tim, and I said, hey, man, go pick up a couple of more of those baits. So he picked a couple of them up, and he met me at Randy's in Lomira. So we had a good time walking around Midwestern Shooter Supply. It's always fun to shop there. Didn't really buy much. And so he gave me two more. So I was out yesterday, and I was running three of them. But do you know, both the pike and the muskie we caught were caught on that original one that he gave me. So now I'm starting to wonder, is it something, you know, now I'll keep running the other ones, which are the same color, and maybe they'll start banging fish just as much. But being as that was the one out of the three that got hit, I'm starting to think, is there something with the action of that particular one? I don't know.
Yeah. Might be the Wiggleton wobble, you know.
Time will tell. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was reading an article, I might have mentioned this last week, about pike and muskies. They initially track the bait visually, but then when they get close, within a certain close range, then they use their lateral line to both hone in to help them, you know, strike it, and also to identify whether, in fact, it's something that they're going to want to eat. So maybe it's just something to do with the thump of the bait. I don't know. All I got to tell you is I ain't changing nothing on it. I'm keeping it exactly, you know, exactly the same, and it's been working. But you can definitely see, though, that color can make a difference. And I got, like, Dr. Sandy comes fishing with me, and he tries to tell me, oh, I don't think color really. He says, it's just a matter of finding a hungry fish, you know, that's going to eat. It doesn't matter. And then but then he talks out of two sides, because when I say, you know, about this one bait, he goes, well, you got some more of those? Oh, well, if color really doesn't matter, why do I need more of them? So,
yeah, right.
But I do believe color, for some reason, at times can make a difference.
Oh, I believe in it wholeheartedly that color makes a difference no matter what kind of fish you're fishing for. But do you remember how John used to get on my case when I'd say I went out to Lake X, and he'd get
right
so mad at me, you know, for not telling everybody? You imagine how he'd be hollering at you right now for not telling people what color it is? Oh, he'd be on your case now.
Oh, yeah. You know, he'd be trying to order them into Smokey's Muskie Shop and selling them to everybody.
Exactly. You betcha. He was no dummy. Yeah. Well, listen, with that, we got to go to a break, Danny.
And, gotcha.
Folks, yeah, we're on 1250 AM. We're on 105.7 FM, The Fan, AM or FM. Catch us either way. We are the Skipper Buds, Cutting Edge Outdoors. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. We are presented by Baitmate Fish Attractants, Coleman Insect Repellents. Hey, we want to thank all our loyal listeners out there listening. I want to thank our sponsors, advertisers. We hope our listeners do your best. If you hear one of our sponsors, go on out there and tell them you heard about it on Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Yeah, I agree.
You agree? Do you concur, Tom?
I concur. Yeah.
You concur. Okay. So can we talk bluegills a little?
Sure. I like talking bluegills. You know, here, I got to bring up something about bluegills. A guy comes in the store last week, and he says, you know, and he recognizes me from the radio show, and he says, well, you're the bluegill king, and I said, or expert or something. I said, where did I ever get that moniker? I said, I'm just a guy who likes to fish for fish. And bluegills are one of them, you know? I mean, I don't know where I get that, but anyway. So what are we going to talk about bluegills about?
Well, you know, I can see them coming in from the store, Tom, and saying, so you're the genius. You know, that I can understand because, you know, you are the genius. You know everything.
Yeah, right.
So, well, you were talking about bluegills, and a couple of weeks ago, you'll recall, we had a gentleman call us up who was talking about Monona and bluegills, and interesting. I've got an article in Dick Ellis's publication, which I'd recommend to anybody on Wisconsin Outdoors. It's free. Pick it up at your local Quick Trips. Sometimes they got them there, and there's articles by various guides. But they're talking about Ron Stressing is the author. He's talking about big summer bluegills, and basically it says that bluegills retreat from the shallow waters. and look for cooler, deeper water. Often the fish will stack up at a certain depth where a thermal cline has the right temperature. It says in summer, you will mark, for example, large bands of panfish on your locator in 15 to 17 feet down over 50 feet of water. And he's talking about Lake Monona here. And that's basically the same advice as when we talked to a gentleman a couple weeks ago. He was talking about the same thing, out over about 50 feet of water, going down about that deep. Now, you were talking about Monona Bay. You said they had reports out there. Is it deep there? Is it deep out? Or is that more shallow fishing?
That's shallow. And I don't necessarily agree that the bluegills are out there suspended. I mean, they're suspended all summer long and suspended, you know, like this time of year, whatever. They're suspended out there. But they're feeding on a, I think I told you this last week or the week before, they're feeding on a zooplankton called Daphnia. I don't think it's got anything to do with the temperature of the water. I think it's because that's where a big portion of their food is, you know. And they're feeding on they're like big swarms of Daphnia. You know, we've seen, you know, pictures on TV of how, like, the dolphins feed on smaller fish. I don't know what they are, sardines or something, you know, and they school them up. I mean, that's basically what it is, you know, feeding on the solid Daphnia. But, like, right now, a person can catch bluegills in one of three places on a lake. They're not all in one place. You can find them in under docks and not just in the shallow water, but there's got to be some type of structure, whether it be wood structure or boat docks or pontoon boats or something. You're going to find some of them there. You're going to find some on the flats where you have intermittent weeds or a lot of weeds, but on the flats where you're looking at, let's say, 6 to 8, 10 feet of water. And then you're going to find them on the deep weed line edges. You know, there's going to be fish down there, and then there's also going to be fish suspended. There's different areas that you can find these fish in, right? And you just got to look for them. You'll find more in one place than in another at times. You know, you go to a different part of the lake, there'll be more in the other place. So they're going to find them all over. I mean, let's face it, Danny. Bluegills are very prolific. They're all over the place, all over the lake. Every lake has got them, it seems like. And you just gotta know that they're going to be one of these places, and eventually you'll find them. It's kind of like crappies. You know, I always tell people you're going to find a lot. You're going to find crappies on the deep weed line edges in the summertime. And not every deep weed line edge is going to have crappies. You got to look for them. But once you find them, they're going to be on a deep weed line edge. Now, there will always be some fish and some crappies under docks. There'll be some crappies suspended, but I think the majority of them you find will be on deep weed line edges. So that's just my 2 cents worth. That's all.
Well, last year I found a weed edge out on Pewaukee that consistently, all I had to do was go anchor there in about 10 feet of water. Consistently, it was a deep weed edge, but there were scattered weeds down below yet. They just didn't come up real high there. And I consistently hammered bluegills all the way into September. And not only bluegills, but bass. I caught a few little walleye. I caught some crappies. I mean, there seemed to be a mixed bag. And I took kids there last year, and I was able to get nonstop action. And but it was just one particular spot. Now, I went back there once this year, and I didn't do anything. But that was quite a while ago, and maybe the fish... I think a lot of the fish then were still shallower and spawning and hadn't set up on that deep, you know, weed edge. Right. So I'll be going back, and I guess next week, Friday, I got to take Dr. Sandy's granddaughter fishing. So I guess I'll be back checking it out, hoping to find it. But sometimes, you know, one spot may change one year to the next. But I think, like you said, under docks and so forth, although it seems to me the ones under docks tend to be more the dinky ones. I don't know.
Smaller ones, but, right.
Yeah,
well,
but...
You know, I was going to tell you, Danny, one time years ago on Nagawicka Lake, there was a certain dock. Wasn't any different than any other dock along the shoreline, at least not that I could see, okay? And I did even a TV show there where I would skip... Now, this is before I knew about mini mites. And I would skip a 32nd-ounce jig with a little 1.5 or 2-inch twister tail, white twister tail. And I'd get a crappie on every cast, all right, every cast. Now, I found that spot days or weeks before, So that's why I decided to do a show catching crappies, you know, and under this dock. So then, I mean, it must have been for, oh, I don't know, three, four times more times I'd go out there, and there were still crappies under that dock, all right? So the following year comes around, I go to that dock expecting to catch crappies. And, you know, that year, every time I stopped at Megawick, I had to stop and check that dock out, and I never caught another darn crappie out of that dock. So one year, they were all over it all the time. The next year, didn't even sniff it. Go figure, right?
Yeah, and what would cause that change? Was there something environmentally that changed? Feed, cover? Who knows? That just seems weird.
I don't. It does. It is weird because, you know, and I would take my sons there, and we'd all. And same thing with now this one spot I know of. This doesn't change. There's somebody along the shoreline put their raft right on the weed line edge. So the raft hung over like 10, 12, 14 feet of water. And I don't know, I guess it provided shade right on that weed line edge. And we could go there. I mean, I could go there today and throw a mini mite by that raft, let it sink down a ways, and I'd be catching crappies. I mean, some days you caught a lot, some days you just caught a few, you know, but there were always some crappies there. And I think it's only because those people put that raft right in that spot. And, you know, one day, this was years ago, one day there was a guy out on the dock, and I kind of got a little closer, and I said, excuse me. I said, is that your raft out there? It's a blue raft. And he says, yeah, why? I said, I just want to thank you for putting it where you put it because I catch a lot of fish by it. So anyway, that was about it.
Well, I suppose, you know, if a guy actually owned a place on a lake, yeah, you like to put rafts out and stuff, I guess, for kids and stuff when they come and visit and swim. But you could almost strategically try and set something up and try and create cover for the fish.
Yeah, and this was a perfect spot. And now, I haven't been out to Nagawicka. I would probably say it's probably been like maybe 3 years that I've been out to Nagawicka, and that's a really good lake. I gotta find out why we haven't been out there more. As a matter of fact, if people want to catch northern pike, legal size and nice, you know, a lot of them, Nagawicka is the place to be. You get out off those deep weed line edges down in about 20 feet of water, you know, 15 to 20 feet, drop a, you know, like a 4 or 5 inch sucker minnow or golden shiner, drop it down. You'll be catching more pike than you ever thought. It's just loaded with them. Just loaded.
Well, how about fishing deep? You know, what if you're going to fish deep for bluegills? Let's say they are suspended. How would you target those?
Like I told you, I think it was last week or the week before, I drive around the lake with the locator on looking for the pods of them. And when I see the pods, I stop, drop my bait down to that depth that I see them at, and you generally catch them.
Would you use like a drop shot rig, or how would you get as far as fishing deep like that?
Okay, like if I was going to put a mini mite down there, I'd have to put some sinkers above it, you know, a foot or a foot and a half above it. Just to
like
get
a split shot?
Yeah, just to get it down there quicker, yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would sink too slow. It'd take forever to get down there. A guy could use a slip bobber rig, you know. That would be perfect, you know.
Right. So, I've never used a split shot with the mini mite before.
Well,
I guess
the only time you really have to is if you're fishing that deeper water and you just want to get it down quick. That's the only
okay.
time. Okay. Well, anyway, we got one more break to do, Danny, and we got to remind Mitch to play the final countdown song.
All set to go. Don't worry.
Oh, all right, Mitch. There you go.
You don't have to remind Mitch of nothing,
there,
Tom.
You know,
he's got it under control.
It's week by week, but I got it.
All right, man.
Come up with a nickname for Mitch. Mitch the Hammer or something. I don't know.
Well, they call me the Mayor. So.
Oh, really?
Do the Mayor.
Mayor Mitch. Yep.
Why
that's
do they
me.
Call you Mayor Mitch?
Long story. Well, we might have to get into it at another time.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, we're going
after this
right
break.
Back. We're going to be right back on 105.7 FM, The Fan, and 1250 AM. You're listening to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors, brought to you by Bait Mate Fish Attractants.
Skipper Buds, Cutting Edge Outdoors. Are you there, Tom?
I am here.
Hello, Tom. You are there. Is this our final segment?
This is it. This is the final countdown.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'm not hearing the final countdown. We're hearing prelude, I guess.
This is the music to the final countdown. It's just not where they're singing the final countdown.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. Gotcha. I was confused.
Hey,
it's tough to be confused.
You're talking about my life now. I live my life confused.
Yeah. So here's the deal. We've been talking about bluegill fishing, Tom. I'm going to ask you this. Have you ever caught a 10-inch bluegill?
Yes.
I have.
All three of my sons have caught at least a 10-inch or bigger. I think one of my sons had one that was 11, and the other one was 10.5, and the other boy got one. As a matter of fact, Andy got the latest one. That was still a number of years ago, a 10-incher out of Oconomowoc Lake.
Okay.
Speaking of that, Danny, the last couple of weeks on John Gillespie's show, where they have the people showing about the big fish they've caught, there's been twice where bluegills that the guy's holding maybe a 9-inch bluegill, and they're saying they're like 12.5 inches.
You know, that really gets to you.
It does.
That really bugs you. Have you thought about seeing a therapist about that?
Well, I just wish people would be honest about it, you know? I mean, if you catch a big one, say what the size is.
Let the little kid say it's people naturally exaggerate. Oh, man, you know, so anyway, the point being, my friend, you said your son got one number of years ago, and it sounds like those big ones that you caught were a number of years ago, correct?
Yes.
Okay, because there's an article in Game and Fish magazine talking about the Midwest here, and the title says in many upper Midwest lakes, the average size of bluegills has decreased. And they're talking about what is to blame. And then they quote Dennis Pratt, who's a biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, said this. He reviewed bluegill data from Wisconsin survey database and discovered that you'd have a better chance of being dealt a royal flush in a hand of five-card stud, which is 649,739-1 odds, than catching a bluegill over 10 inches on a random Wisconsin lake. So basically, it's really saying that those 10-inch bluegills have become increasingly few and far between.
I'm sure they are few and far between, but I'll tell you, there's a few lakes that I hate to keep saying Oconomowoc Lake, but by golly, they got big bluegills out there. John Gillespie's done a show out there. Larry Smith has done a show out there where they've caught bluegills that might have been 10 inches. Okay, I know they were like 9.5. You can find schools of these big bluegills. I mean, you got to be lucky to find them. You know, those big ones like that. But boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, if we're on Oconomowoc Lake and we want to bring home some fish to eat, we just start looking for the bluegills, and we'll bring home a couple dozen really nice ones. You know, and I'm not talking 10-inchers, but let's say between 7.5 and 8.5 inches. You know, averaging about 8 inches.
I will have to say I've never caught a 9 or a 10 inch bluegill. The biggest I've ever caught is 8 inches. I've never really got a Mogambo bluegill. Now, one of the kids at Smokey's at the Muskie Shop years ago caught a giant bluegill right by the pier.
Right.
And I want to say it was like 11 inch. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the size, but I just remember one of the kids caught a big one. Yeah, big one.
It was giant. It was like a mutant. It was like somebody had transported it from a different lake and thrown it under that pier, because I just couldn't believe it. And I think he got it mounted, or he was going to get it mounted.
As a matter of fact, my two older boys, okay, when they caught theirs, they were kids, okay? They were little kids. And so I told them, I said, I'll mount it for you, you know. So they got theirs mounted. Now, when my son Andy caught his, he was like, oh, he must have been about 26, 27 years old, 28, something like that. And so he looked at me and he says, are you going to mount this for me? I said, you're a grown man. Mount it yourself.
Well, I don't know. You did get one mounted, though, you said?
The two oldest boys, theirs are mounted.
Okay. Who did you have do that?
Yeah, when they were young, I mean, the one was like 9 years old. The other one was 5 years old, you know, when they caught them. So at that age, dad said, hey, I'll mount them for you. But the other boy, when he caught his, my goodness, he's a grown man working and all that. He can mount his own. Cost about around $100, $70 maybe.
Okay. You don't really see a lot of mounted bluegills. I guess if you were going to get some bluegills mounted, it would be best if you had like a couple of them, do it kind of like on driftwood or something like that. Do kind of like a little display.
Yeah, that might be cool. But
unless you go down with our friend Ron Johnson in Arizona and catch those 3-pounders.
Yeah, well, those are green-eared sunfish. Those aren't bluegills. Did you know that?
Okay.
Yeah, they're green-eared.
Well, I heard. Okay, so they're a different. They're really not a bluegill.
Right. They look just like a bluegill, except that the gill on a bluegill is actually blue, dark blue. But on the ones in Arizona, those are green, and that's why they're called green-eared sunfish.
Gotcha.
So, hey,
I think we're about done, Tom.
Yeah, I know. Time flew by.
Time flew by.
It sure did.
That's all I got, my friends.
To all the listeners, thanks for listening. And God bless and stay free, everyone.
You've been listening to Skipperbud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. We'll talk to you all next week, my friends.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free. I was born free. I was born free. Born free. Free like a river raging strong. Is the wind I'm
Oh, that's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.